regulated militia being necessary to the security of a free state, the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. Welcome to another edition of Bearing Arms, Cam and Company. My name is Cam Edwards. Glad to be back with you once again after a 4-day weekend, I guess, up in our nation's capital. Was hoping that the shutdown might conclude while I was actually up there, because I kind of wanted to go check out some of the Smithsonian museums. But no, the Schumer shutdown hopefully will end at some point this week, now that at least 8 Senate Democrats have agreed to vote for a clean CR. I guess they're going to get a vote on extending the Obamacare subsidies at some point, but no guarantee that that vote will pass. We should see some movement on H.R. 38, the National Constitutional Right to Carry Reciprocity Act. That has been on the House calendar since early October, but of course the House hasn't really been doing any business during the shutdown. But Speaker Johnson telling House members, time to return to the Capitol. So hopefully, once the shutdown is officially over, we'll start to see the House start moving on some regular order of business. And among the bills slated for consideration very soon, H.R. 38. So I would encourage you, if you are listening to the sound of my voice, now would be a really good time to contact your Congress critter and urge them to support H.R. 38. Bill has, I believe, 189 sponsors right now. So there are some Republicans out there who have not yet signed on to this bill, which is pretty simple. It basically tells states you will recognize the concealed carry permits issued by all other states. And in those states where a concealed carry permit is not required in order for someone to lawfully carry, so long as they can legally carry in their home state, they can carry in other states as well. Now, this doesn't change any gun-free zones that are set up by state law or anything like that, but it does, again, recognize that our right to keep and bear arms doesn't stop at the state line. I think the prospects of passage in the House are pretty good. I think they're pretty slim in the Senate, but we'll take things as they come. And right now, a first step would be getting H.R. 38 over to the upper chamber. On today's program, we're going to be talking with Mark Walters from Armed American Radio, another Mondays with Mark segment. I was on Mark's program last night for about an hour, talking a lot about what's going on in Virginia, where Democrats not only took every statewide office last week, but also captured a supermajority in the House of Delegates. And the gun control bills are coming. We know that this is going to be our reality here in Virginia in the months to come. Every bad bill you can imagine is headed our way, quite frankly. So what can be done about it? Well, last night I talked with Mark about lawsuits, which I think we will see a lot of litigation coming from the Old Dominion here in the coming months. But also, looking back to what happened 5 years ago, the last time Democrats took complete control of state government, and that was the establishment of the wildfire that was the Second Amendment sanctuary movement that spread across the state in just a matter of weeks, ultimately over 100 jurisdictions passing resolutions or ordinances proclaiming that laws that violated the Second Amendment would not be recognized or enforced in these locales. Will we see a return of the Second Amendment sanctuary movement? I certainly hope so, and it's the big topic of conversation on today's program. Take a look and a listen. Mark, how you doing, my friend?
I'm doing great this morning. How are you, Cam Edwards, my brother?
I am good. I appreciate getting a chance to hang out with you for an hour last night on the Monster Cast. It was fun.
Always fun, yeah.
Not a great topic, you know, the demise of gun rights in Virginia, where I live, but you know, you got to talk about it sometimes, right?
Well, we do have to. It's very important that people understand. You know, I think you and I talked about it last night. It's the day you can't cry over spilled milk, man. It happened. So now we've got to, you know, we accept what is in this business, right?
Yep.
And we move forward. Looking backward isn't going to do anything. We can sit and analyze why it happened all day long, Cam. But at this point, what we need to know is it happened. What are we going to do moving forward? And maybe hopefully we can get into some of that, because you have your hands full, brother. Worst situation you've been in a long time.
Yeah, absolutely. And I do want to talk about that a little bit. But while I was waiting in the wings last night, you were talking about an issue. Normally, you'll stream the show on, well, it's available on a variety of sources, but yeah, Among them is YouTube. But you talked about you've been suspended from YouTube, right?
Well, to be honest with you, I'm not really sure. I'm restricted from live streaming. Let me put it that way.
Okay.
So as far as I'm concerned, that's a suspension.
Yeah.
I don't know how that works. I cannot find an answer. I got one email from them. Well, let me explain how it happened first off, which is what I was talking about last night.
Yeah.
I had, 10-minute or a 5-minute opening with a number of bullet points that I wanted to cover. And then right before I went on air, when I went to hit live stream, YouTube, I was informed that my live stream wouldn't feed over to YouTube. And I had about 5 minutes to look into why. And that just, that irked me and got me good. So I spent a little bit of time in the opening remarks of the show kind of ragging on YouTube when I found out what I could real quick. I had put together a goat gun, a toy gun, on the program during the breaks for people that were watching the Daily Defense last week because they're one of my partners. And I said, guys, if you want, let me build this. It just came today. Let me build this for you during the break. So if you're watching the live stream, you can see me put this together for you on camera. It's a toy, miniature toy gun. It says right on the cover, ages 13 and up. So they didn't like that. It violated their community standards, apparently, of teaching people how to build firearms when it's
a
flipping toy. So I appealed. And just this morning, right before I sat down with you, my appeal was firmly rejected. So I can still no longer stream on YouTube. And, a number of reasons why that bothers me. First of all, I've lived my entire life without YouTube. I really couldn't care less. My microphone is my YouTube, quite frankly. But we are trying desperately to rebuild our social media that was taken from us over the Biden years, as you well know. I talk about politics and guns. Those are two issues that apparently YouTube didn't like over the Biden years, nor did Facebook and others. Now you've got Musk on X. We're getting thousands of viewers now watching the show. YouTube restricted it. They did not lay out any plan for how long. I have absolutely no idea. Restrictions can be permanent. They can be 7 days. They can be 14 days, 90 days. I have no idea. It doesn't explain it in there. And trying to go in to find it was kind of a joke. I'm not going to waste a lot of my time. It's more valuable than YouTube right now. But at the same time, it's very important. And I would ask people that, how do you combat this stuff, right? Well, guys, come over and subscribe to my YouTube channel and help me out. I mean, I the more subscribers you have, we've only got about, we're under 700 subscribers. It hasn't been a big platform for us because of what we talk about.
Right.
But we are growing it. And we're seeing some of our short videos begin to get up to 15,000 views. So if we can crack that algorithm, it would certainly help. So if you guys can get on YouTube.com, Armed American Radio, and subscribe to the channel, it would be a really big help to us as we attempt to take this back. But for now, I guess building a toy goat gun is a community strike violation of their building firearms. But the appeal was rejected just this morning. It was completely, firmly, roundly, soundly rejected by them. They reviewed it again and nope, violates their community standards. So you can't build toy guns on YouTube, guys. Just let
that is amazing. That's amazing. I wonder what happens if you try to build a Nerf gun. I mean, this is just. and again, the inability to talk to a human being
is
incredibly frustrating, right?
Yeah,
because the standards, as you say, they are so vague and fuzzy. You don't know what you've done to violate the terms of their conditions. And then again, to try to appeal this, it's a nightmare. But I hate that you're going through it, but I agree. Folks need to head over, subscribe to the Armed American Radio's YouTube channel. If you're not already a subscriber to Bearing Arms Scam and Company, do that as well.
Please.
And now I kind of want to build a toy gun on the show.
I'm very seriously contemplating ordering just a few more from my guys over there at Goat Guns and doing that while we're restricted there. The worst part about that is we use the YouTube feed to feed over to the Armed American Radio page. So like a lot of viewers like to go to armedamericanradio.com and click watch live or listen live. Well, watch live isn't coming out. So I'll talk to my web guys. And I think what we'll do is we'll move the Rumble stream over and maybe draw it off the Rumble stream. I don't know. We'll see. But what was interesting, it is interesting to point this out. You mentioned that it's not clear how you violate. Their firearm policy is clear when you read it, none of which applied to me because it was a toy gun. And then they did focus on under 16 or something like that, maybe because I said it was a toy that they felt it might not be inappropriate. But it is very vague in there. So it's probably a combination of both. So we'll ride it out and see how long it is. It says once you've appealed and it's rejected, there is no more appeal process. Like you said, you can't talk to a human being. So it is maddening. But at the same time, Blank YouTube, as far as I'm concerned.
That's kind of how I feel about Virginia Democrats.
Me too, and I don't live there anymore.
Talk about a good segue here. Yeah, so so as we were discussing last night, Democrats not only took the governor, lieutenant governor, attorney general's races, they added 13 seats in the House of Delegates. The state Senate was not up for election this year, but they now have a supermajority in the House, which gives them some wiggle room, right? At least on the House side of things, in terms of passing gun control measures, they don't have to get every Democrat on board. They've got room to give rural Democrats an exemption and say, okay, you guys don't have to vote for this one. It's okay. So I expect we are going to see some absolutely awful bills. In fact, not just one or two. I mean, I think
a bunch.
This is going to be the year. I worry that 2026 is going to be the year that Virginia becomes East California, South New Jersey, whatever you want to call it. Bad laws are headed our way. And something I mentioned last night, Mark, was, you know, I hope, because you had asked, you know, what can we do in the short term? And one of the things I mentioned was the Second Amendment sanctuary movement, which, you know, crossed Virginia like wildfire back in December 2019, January 2020, which was the last time Democrats had complete control of state government in the 2019 elections. We haven't heard much about Second Amendment sanctuaries in the years since. And I wanted to just get your thoughts on that movement. And if you think that a revival and maybe a strengthening of the Second Amendment sanctuary movement is on the horizon in Virginia.
It's a great topic to talk about because, as you pointed out last night on the airwaves, I had mentioned that I thought it was Virginia that pioneered that. But you had corrected me, and I believe you're right. It was Illinois. But it was Virginia's incredible response to the Second Amendment sanctuary movement that made all the national headlines and became the model for what we would later see in states, including Florida, gun-friendly states like Arizona, and, you know, gun-unfriendly states like Colorado and other states across the country. And if you're not going to get a sanctuary policy put in at the county level in these states, which Virginia, I think, got what, all but maybe one county or something crazy.
Something like that. I mean, it was more than one. But I think, you know, Virginia has 120 counties and independent cities, and I think it was more than 100.
Yeah, my memory serves me correct, I'm thinking like 112, 113. I didn't know there was 100.
Yeah.
But it was up there. It was an incredible movement, pioneered and spearheaded by the guys over at VCDL who did incredible work there. A couple things to tie into this conversation. VCDL's got 11,000 members right now. That number needs to climb now more than ever before. And I know that you'll be active there and a lot of other folks are going to be active there. The NRA will be doing its own thing for its own coffers and its own membership base, also based on Waples Mill Road in Northern Virginia, as you know. But VCDL needs to see those numbers push up over 20, 25, 30,000. And, you know, I believe this is going to breathe new life into it. And I think it's not only going to breathe new life into it, but it might be on steroids. Because Virginia gun owners that are concerned about what's getting ready to happen, if they're not now, will be very, very soon. Because every bad thing that can happen to you as a gun owner in Virginia, as we say down south of the Mason-Dixon line, is fitting to happen. They're going to throw the kitchen sink at you. Some of it might not work because some of the Dems will get a little radical. Last night we were talking about waiting periods, for example. Mm-hmm. They're going to come at you for waiting periods. How do we know this? Because we've got the list of what they did in 2019 and 2020 that Youngkin wouldn't sign. Now they're going to get it signed. So we know that it's all coming. But, you know, waiting periods, for example, you're going to see some Democrats push for 30 days. I guarantee there's going to be some lunatic pushing for 30 days for not just firearms, but ammo as well. Yep. Now, that'll be pared back. You might see 7. You could even wind up with 10 at the very least. 3. The bottom line, folks, is we know it's coming. Okay. And what's really important, if you live anywhere outside of Virginia and you're watching this or listening to this, this is the model they want for you if the Dems ever take over the trifecta again in D.C. What you're getting ready to see happen in Virginia is everything they want in Washington, D.C. And when they tell you they don't want to take your guns, oh boy, they sure are going to cheer and clap for those expanded red flag laws that are confiscation of your firearms without due process. So they're lying through their teeth. And the worst part about this is, Cam, sadly, they will get what they want in Virginia now. And that supermajority in the House was a kill shot, man. That hurt. Yeah.
I don't think anybody expected 13 seats to get picked up by the Democrats, even in the worst, pre-election scenarios.
And, you know, when you look at things like, you know, a waiting period, like that's something where the Second Amendment Sanctuary movement can't necessarily have an impact, because we're talking about, you know, laws that are basically, they can be enforced by the Virginia State Police. You got to go through an FFL. The FFL doesn't want to lose their license, right? So, you know, they something like that, I think, is going to be difficult to push back against outside of a court battle. And I expect that we will see a challenge to any waiting period law that that comes into effect. But when it comes to things like magazine bans, when it comes to things like
FOID cards,
you know, right? Well, thankfully we don't have those, but hopefully we don't get them. You're right.
Well, that's on their list.
Permits to purchase, right? When it comes to hardware bans, when it comes to things that are executed at the county level. You know, the first time around, again, you talk about sort of the Second Amendment Sanctuary movement on steroids. I was thinking about this last night after we got off the air, because first time around, this was really spearheaded by the county commissioners. We have a county form of county supervisors. That's our county form of government in Virginia. I think this time around, I want to see county sheriffs, Commonwealth's attorneys, which are the district attorneys, the county attorneys. I want to see them be very proactive. And I think gun owners need to be lobbying those offices, too, and saying, listen, we expect you, because these are elected positions, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. We expect you to take a stand and publicly say, I'm not enforcing. I'm not going to go out and prosecute somebody for possessing a 20-round magazine. I'm not going to prosecute somebody. I'm not going to arrest somebody for owning an AR-15, because we know that those bans are coming. So that's one of the things that I hope we'll see VCDL start to do, is to start to apply that pressure, not only to county supervisors, but to these other county level offices, because it is within a sheriff's discretion as to whether or not they are going to make a particular law a priority. Every time you get pulled over and you're let off with a warning instead of a speeding ticket, that's them using their discretion, the discretion of their office, right, as to whether or not they want to charge you with a crime or let you go with a warning. They can do that with possessory gun laws, too. They can do it. They can make charging decisions. The county prosecutors can. Is this a valuable use of taxpayer dollars, or is this a waste of money to go after an individual? You know, and I talked about this last night. There were before, you know, we got into this sort of gray area for legalization of marijuana in Virginia, where things stand now, there were a number of prosecutors who said, we're not going to prosecute anybody if somebody gets arrested for, you know, less than an ounce of pot. We're not going to prosecute them. And now, if somebody's drug trafficking, yes, we're definitely going to prosecute that, right? So there's nothing stopping prosecutors from saying, I'm not going to go after somebody because they've got a 17-round magazine.
Well, you know, so interesting, too, on top of this, we're not in the Biden era, right? So we don't have to worry about the ATF swooping in at the federal level under a Trump administration to start going after dealers or, you know, individuals. We've always got to be concerned about the ATF going after individuals. All you've got to do is look at the work Lee Williams, the gun writer, has done on the Tate Adamiak case,
right,
where he was buying legal parts from that you can buy today from gun broker, inert toys, literally toys, that the ATF actually remachined and retooled over a lengthy process to turn them into quote unquote gun parts. So you do have to be concerned about an overzealous ATF, not so much under a Trump administration as we would have under a Biden administration, but still it's a concern. You know, a lot of people don't realize that the sheriff is the oldest constitutionally elected office in this country. The sheriff is extremely powerful in his county. He is the lead dog, or she is the lead dog in the county. The sheriff can stand at the border and say, you're not here. You're not coming in. We're not going to do that. We're not going to enforce that, et cetera. The problem, which is not going to be a big deal in Virginia right now, but you have states, for example, that said you could build a machine gun or a suppressor as long as all of the parts were from the home state, nothing was imported into the state, et cetera. That's still a violation of federal law. And there are people doing time in federal penitentiaries because of that.
Yeah.
So the feds can come in. I use that as an example. Now, that's not going to be an issue in Virginia, but it's an example of how the feds can overstep just about anybody they want to if they have to.
Right. And that's the thing, right? I mean, listen, and I said this 5 years ago, and I'll reiterate it now. The Second Amendment Sanctuary Movement is a defensive measure.
Yes, it is. A good one.
Right. But it is not a catch-all. It doesn't stop every bad law from being enforced. As you say, it does not supersede federal law. We've seen that, you know, with the Missouri Second Amendment Preservation Act, which was struck down by the federal court. Supreme Court denied review of that. You've got to be careful about how you do this. And any gun rights organization that comes out and says, you can nullify federal law. No, you can't.
No, you can't.
And in fact, you can't nullify state law. But what you can do, as you say, those constitutionally elected sheriffs, they do have the discretion, just like police chiefs have the discretion to say, this is not going to be a priority for me. Mm-hmm. This is not going to be a priority for my office. I want people to understand that if you possess these items that I believe are protected by the Constitution, I'm not coming after you. That is within their power. That is within their authority.
And that's extremely powerful, too, because
absolutely it is.
That sends a very bold message to the Democrats in Virginia, almost along a I will not comply. But you have an I will not comply at the highest level of law enforcement within your county. And that sends a very, very powerful message to the Dems. You know, there's a lot of different rabbit holes we could go down with this with the Second Amendment sanctuary issue. I'm kind of curious because we haven't really heard a lot about it, as you mentioned, from 2019 to 2020 when it really picked up and gained a lot of steam. And again, not just in Virginia, but they spearheaded it. Has there been any change in any sheriff's offices around the counties or any people who were voted out that supported these issues that might go? I don't know the dynamic in play there, but I would assume that there's got to be some change at that county level, that maybe some of it has to even be revisited. And I guess the follow-up question to that is, with everything we know is coming down the pike, are gun owners going to give up? And that's always a fear. And I'm hopeful. And the reason I asked that in Virginia, I hate to ask that, but you have to, because a lot of them didn't show up at the polls. The bottom line is, if every single gun owner in the state of Virginia voted their guns, you would not be in the predicament that you're in right now today. So again, not going back to cry over spilled milk, what is, but you have to look at that and determine, is VCDL going to be successful in rejuvenating that to the extent that they were able to do in 2019, 2020 in today's political climate? I would like to think so, but you never know.
Yeah, I mean, listen, it could have been lightning in a bottle, right? I mean, it could have been. And I think, you know, one of the big tests we'll see here in just a couple of months is the VCDL's lobby day. In 2020, you know, that was the year we had at least 30,000, 50,000. I mean, it's hard to get an accurate count because downtown Richmond was full of
ABC said there were only there were less than 5,000 people. Yeah, I saw ABC and NBC so we could CBS. Meanwhile, my eyes are showing me a minimum of 50,000 people.
I was lucky enough to be asked to speak that day, and I saw that crowd. I mean, I watched that crowd. There was no way 5,000 people. I think 50,000, 60,000 is a much higher estimate, much better estimate. But I got to tell you, man, 2021, 2022, even last year, a couple of dozen people showing up for the Lobby Day rally, right? So that's going to be, I think, an early test. And even then, even before then, I mean, looking back, it really was early December, late November, when we started to see the Second Amendment Sanctuary movement take off. And you know, I was lucky enough to be able to cover this on the ground. I mean, I remember driving out to Amelia County. It's about 45 minutes from where I live. And there were 300 people in attendance at the county supervisors meeting. There was one meeting that had to be moved to the local high school because there were so many people who wanted to show up. And I think it was almost, you know, 800 people in a county of maybe 12,000. Mm-hmm. We should be able to get an idea within the next couple of weeks as to whether or not we're going to see a resurgence of that Second Amendment Sanctuary movement. And
well, that's you know, when you look at Amelia counties, you look at some of these rural counties, guys, when you're talking about bringing 300 people to a commissioner meeting, that's a lot of people in a
absolutely
rural county,
it is.
Folks.
Right. We're talking, you know, normal, you know, normal attendance, 5-6 people, right?
Yeah. And that you're overflowing and you can't fit inside. So that's a very positive response. The thing that concerns me, and it always concerns me when it comes to this issue, is you've got, as we said, the Democrats have total control. You know, the House 13 delegates, that was a kill shot. You got the governor. You got a guy who wants his political opponents dead as your AG. Who's going to trust this guy? Okay. Right. Well, the Dems will. Where I'm going with this is, I hope the turnout is that big. My concern, my biggest concern, is do people feel like, well, it's already done. We don't stand a chance. It's like California. Now, you and I both know the warriors at the helm of a lot of these organizations across these states. And we've asked questions over the years, and I have joked with a number of them out in California. I can't believe you live there. I couldn't even flip on my local news and watch the weather knowing that I'm watching, you know, with what's going on in California all day long. I just don't, you know, so I wonder how many people. I talked to a good buddy of mine who lives in Virginia Beach. just a couple days ago. And I said, what are you going to do? He says, we're just turning off the news, bro. I'm just not watching it anymore. Nobody's getting my guns. I'm not paying attention to it. I'll donate to who I have to donate to, but I'm not going to watch it. I own my guns. I'm keeping my guns. And as long as I don't watch it on TV. Now, see, I understand his attitude. Sure. He's over 70 years old. I get it. But man, you know, if you're 20s, 30s, 40s, this is your future we're talking about for another 30, 40 years that somebody 70 or 80 might not have. Guys, you got to get involved. Don't walk away from this. Show up at these commission meetings. For crying out loud, if there's a Second Amendment sanctuary movement, send a letter to your sheriff and commissioners and say, look, man, we need your help here, and show up at these rallies. I might even come up to that rally. I was thinking about that yesterday. I might come up to that rally this year. I was unable to make it last time I was asked to speak, and unfortunately it didn't work with my travel schedule, but I would love to come up this year and be a part of that, help out the best I could.
Well, you do, and we'll attend together, and we'll go out and grab a cigar or and
like a plan to me, brother.
And that's the thing, man. Listen, you want to turn off the news? Fine, turn off the news. But you know what? Before you do, sign up for the VCDL alerts.
Yes.
Right? Sign up for the NRA-ILA grassroots alerts so that you're at least getting your news regarding your right to keep and bear arms from a trusted source. I understand the – I just want to bury my head in the sand. I just want to dig a hole and crawl out. I get it. I get it. But – like you said, this is too important to fight. This is a multi-generational fight. We are fighting not just for our rights today, but we are fighting for our rights a decade or two decades from now. And we do need to be involved and engaged, no matter how upset and pissed off we might be at the moment.
Fight. You're going to have to do that. I understand the complacency aspect. I know a lot of people, as you do, that live in California and behind the blue wall in New York, who are, you know, are warriors. They're activists. They lead the organizations. But trying to get people to rally behind them when they feel like it's a lost cause. They think, for example, I'm not going to donate any money. The Democrats don't listen to me. What good is this going to do? I'll save it up for something else. You know, I understand that sentiment on both sides of that.
Mm-hmm.
All I can tell you is I was guilty of telling people to leave Illinois, as I mentioned last night, when they didn't have a concealed handgun permit at all. Okay, in Illinois, I said, if you don't like, you're just going to have to get out and move. 2 years later, I was proven wrong. And as we know, Illinois has been controlled by Democrats forever. So it is possible. And you're going to have to hang your hat on whether or not some of these rural Democrats are going to say this bill goes too far. But unfortunately, you are now in a position which is miserable, I think, because I've never lived in a state where I've had to think about it in those terms. But you're now in a position where the good things that happen to you in Virginia are going to be how few things that suck actually make it through. And that's a really bad position to be in.
It is. Yeah, it is. I mean, we've had, we've been in a sort of stalemate for the past 4 years where we've had Youngkin as the backstop. And he vetoed more than 30 gun control bills this year, right? So, I mean, again, we know that this avalanche of anti-gun legislation is coming.
It's an avalanche, yeah.
And it is. It's a matter of, how bad is it going to be? We know it's not going to be great.
Well, the courts in the Third Circuit will be your friend.
In the Fourth Circuit, buddy.
Oh, you're in the Fourth Circuit. That's right.
They are not our friends. They've upheld Maryland's handgun qualification license. In fact, we had a case out of Virginia dealing with the handgun sales to 18 to 20-year-olds. Fourth Circuit reversed a lower court decision. So I'm hopeful that, President Trump can remake the Fourth Circuit.
As he did the Third.
Okay. I mean, imagine that, Mark, that, there may be a day a year from now, maybe 2 years from now, where New Jersey has better gun laws than Virginia because the Third Circuit has struck down New Jersey gun control laws while the Fourth Circuit's upholding Virginia's.
That takes us to part of our discussion last night with Supreme Court cases, because right now the court's looking at four, I believe, this week at conference, possible another two slated for a total of six between now and the end of 2025. And three of those cases will make the Democrats' efforts in Virginia a moot point. If the Supreme Court were to take it, grant cert, and rule in our favor, that's a big stretch considering they only take approximately 1% or less of all cases that hit them.
Yeah.
But if they were to do this, we're in a post-Bruin environment now. The court, as we talked about last night, has had lots of time to watch how the lower courts are going to react to the decision in Bruin, and we now know. So it is very possible an 18 to 20-year-old, which the Democrats are going to come after in Virginia, it's very possible the court could take that I'm not too worried about the weed case in Virginia. I think you have bigger fish to fry than that. But when it comes to an assault weapons ban, yeah, you're in the Fourth Circuit there. I confuse you with the Third, which Trump has flipped, by the way. So some good things happening in the Third Circuit. Maybe that can happen in the Fourth. But again, that takes time. You know, so lots to talk about. Not enough time. I'm sorry. I'm long.
I know.
Radio talk show host in me, brother.
I get it, man. This could be a monster cast of its own. But listen, I appreciate that you join us on the program. We'll let you get back to your day. I know you got some shredding to do, not of the paper variety, but of the six string variety. And again, folks can check out Armed American Radio's Daily Defense each and every day. Sunday monster cast as well. Yep. Hopefully on YouTube before long, but if not, Rumble, just go to armedamericanradio.com. You can check out the stream there. Mark, thank you for everything you do. Always enjoy our Mondays together, and looking forward to doing this very soon, man.
I wouldn't want to start my Monday any other way than talking to you, brother. I love you. Thanks for everything you do, Cam, and thanks for having me today.
I love you too. Talk to you soon, Mark. Thanks, man.
You bet.
My thanks to Mark. Join me on the program as always. Hopefully we'll get the YouTube situation dealt with here in the very near future. Right now, let's turn our attention to today's Armed Citizen story, our good deed of the day, and our recidivist report. We'll start there with a case out of the Lone Star State of Texas. Fox 26 in Houston reporting on the case of a teenager named Corey Oliver, released after probation ends, now accused of new crimes. Well, as it turns out, Mr. Oliver was actually accused of new crimes while he was on juvenile probation. Oliver was serving juvenile probation for three felonies, including robbery, evading arrest, and possession of a firearm. Now, all of those crimes, robbery in particular, I would think, would result in a incarceration sentence, not a sentence involving probation, but whatever. While he was on juvenile probation, Oliver then picked up three more charges: aggravated robbery, tampering with evidence, possession of a prohibited weapon, a machine gun, probably an illegally converted semi-automatic firearm. According to Andy Cahan from Houston Crime Stoppers, Oliver was accused of selling a gun to somebody. Then after he sold the gun and got the money, he turned around and then robbed the guy, stealing the gun to get the gun back. So July 31st, his juvenile probation ends. Why it was not extended when he picked up these new charges is unclear. But for whatever reason, his juvenile probation expired on July 31st. August 1st, he gets out of jail on a $40,000 bond. And then according to court documents, he proceeded to violate that bond multiple times. On October 15th, Corey Oliver became a fugitive. 10 days later, he was arrested. Police say he was once again caught with a gun that had been illegally converted to full auto. Now, keep in mind, this 18-year-old has already been convicted of three felonies as a juvenile. So he's not allowed to touch any gun, semi-automatic, fully automatic, whatever. He has lost his right to keep and bear arms. He is now being held without bond, finally, until he returns to court on January 26th of next year. But again, why was he released to begin with? Was it just that he turned 18, and so even though he had violated his probation on numerous occasions, picking up new charges, they let him go? I still don't understand. But for whatever reason, he was out on the streets for a period of several months, and I suppose could bond out again here in early January. But it does beg the question, why did this 18-year-old, who apparently could not comply with the law even while he was on probation, why was he cut loose on July 31st and allowed to allegedly commit more crimes, including a violent felony? Today's Armed Citizen story comes to us from Seattle, Washington, where police say a would-be carjacking victim shot two people in self-defense over the weekend. This was, I believe, on Sunday, 3:30 Sunday morning. Excuse me. Officers responded to reports of a shooting on First Avenue. Police say they found one man suffered from gunshot wounds, another man described as a, quote, licensed gun owner. Police detained both of them. Authorities say while the gun owner was parked in his car, a white sedan with four masked individuals inside drove up. Two men, armed, then exited the sedan, allegedly tried to steal the gun owner's sports car, which is when he shot them. Three people fled in the sedan. One of the suspects taken to Harborview Medical Center in serious condition. Another dropped off later at the hospital and also listed in serious condition. I guess the suspect that was taken to Harborview Medical Center was probably the one that was there still on the scene when police arrived. At this point, it appears to be a clear-cut case of self-defense. You are where you have a right to be. Four guys pull up, two of them with guns, demand your vehicle. You are, at that point, I think, have a reasonable fear of a death or great bodily injury. And in Washington, you are allowed to act in self-defense under those circumstances. So the licensed gun owner not arrested, nor has that individual been charged at this point. We'll keep our eyes open for any more details. But at this point, it looks like a lawful case of self-defense, and the carjackers messed with the wrong victim early Sunday morning. Finally today, our good deed of the day, in the right place at the right time, willing and able to do the right thing. Also a vehicular-related incident. Good Samaritans pulling a man from a burning car in Clearwater, Florida. This also happened, well, I guess if you want to call Friday afternoon the weekend, that happened over the weekend. It was Friday afternoon. David Calderon, one of the Good Samaritans who saw what was going on, jumped off of his motorcycle when he saw the incident in question. He said, "I was recording, and then I saw an arm out of the car that's trying to pull him out. I didn't think about it." He said, "I just ran right in." He said, "There was only one guy that was able to do it. He was struggling. So I just helped him out. We did it together." Investigators haven't said why the vehicle caught fire. It was a, looks like a pretty late model Porsche. Calderon says he grabbed the driver under both arms. So we just lifted. We tried setting him right next to the car, but everybody's screaming. The flames. So there's gas everywhere on the ground. Since we had to take him farther away. Calderon described the situation as really scary. He said, "You know, it wasn't just let me help somebody. It was very scary for us," he said. He said, "I just wish that anybody else would have done it. I hope somebody does it for me if it happens." Calderon also sang the praises of first responders, saying that they were there within seconds. He said, "Thank God for them. They're the real heroes. They're immediate, what they do, and they were amazing." Well, I'm glad to hear that they were there so quickly. But again, if it were not for the Good Samaritans who pulled that driver out of the car, this could have turned out very differently. Clearwater Police and Fire Rescue spokesperson Rob Shaw even said, "Had they not gotten involved, we likely would have had a very different story with a possibly tragic ending." So as fast as the first responders were able to get to the scene, the Good Samaritans were there first and were very likely able to save a life Friday afternoon in Clearwater, Florida. So in the right place at the right time, willing and able to do the right thing. David Calderon and the other anonymous Good Samaritan, we thank you for your very, very good deeds. All right, that is going to do it for this edition of Bearing Arms, Cam & Company. I want to thank you for being a part of the program as always. Looking forward to joining you once again tomorrow for a Two-Way Tuesday. We're going to be talking about what's going on in Connecticut, where a ban on so-called assault weapons, that ban now being appealed to the Supreme Court. Also, Connecticut's Attorney General taking aim, not at Glock, but at Ruger for a pistol that is supposedly easy to turn into a full auto machine gun, albeit illegally. So we've already seen, again, lawsuits against Glock. We've seen bills in California that would pull Glock off the shelves. Sounds like Connecticut Attorney General William Tong is at least pressuring Ruger to remove this pistol from the market. And if not, litigation may follow, and who knows, given the anti-gun majorities in Connecticut, legislation might follow as well. So we'll be talking about that on tomorrow's program. Thanks again for being a part of today's show. Do check out BearingArms.com throughout the day. Keep you up to date on all of the latest Second Amendment news and information from all across the nation. And if you like what you see, I'd encourage you to become a VIP, VIP Gold, or VIP Platinum member while the shutdown continues. And it sounds like it could be over soon. Use the promo code POTUS47 and you can get 74% off your VIP, VIP Gold, or VIP Platinum membership. You'll get great benefits at every tier of support, but no matter which tier you choose, we certainly do thank you for supporting the work we're doing here at Bearing Arms. Couldn't do this without you, so thank you again. Have a great rest of your Monday, or as good as Mondays can be, we'll see you back here again tomorrow. Until then, be well, be safe, and be free.